Welcome to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. Third-party candidates such as Gary Johnson, Jill Stein, and Evan McMullen offer an alternative to the Clinton and Trump campaigns. Both major party candidates are running a greater than 50% unfavorable rating as voters grapple with even more October surprises. Libertarian and former New Mexico Governor Gary Johnson is the only third-party candidate listed on the ballot in all 50 states. As of today, Johnson is polling at 7% compared with Clinton's 42% and Trump's 39%. But Johnson and other third-party candidates argue they don't need to hit the 270 electoral mark to take the White House. They just need to keep Trump and Clinton from getting there. The Johnson-Weld platform calls for smaller government, a reduced military, and legalization of marijuana. Gary Johnson has not released details of his tax plan yet. He recently snapped at a reporter for pressing him for more information. He was gracious to us, however, even though we did have to explain the basics of country of origin labeling to the presidential candidate with roots in South Dakota. We reached Gary Johnson by phone in New York before his visit to the state. Here is our conversation.
Well, I think that I am speaking on behalf of majority of the electorate when I say that I think most people are fiscally responsible. Smaller government is a good thing, less taxes. I think I'm speaking on behalf of most people in this country when I say that I'm socially inclusive, that people should be able to make choices in their own lives always, of course, unless those choices put other people in harm's way. I think I speak on behalf of the majority of people in this country when I say that I think most people are skeptical when it comes to our military interventions, when it comes to the U.S. getting involved in regime change, that it makes the world less safe, not more safe. I think I speak on behalf of the majority of Americans in this country when I say that I support free markets, that free market is the opposite of crony capitalism. Crony capitalism is when government picks winners and losers, and that free market results in more U.S. jobs, not less U.S. jobs.
Tell me what the first 100 days of a Gary Johnson administration would look like. What are some of your priorities?
Well, contained in a pledge in the first 100 days to come up with a balanced budget, and that contains a whole lot of ingredients. You can't balance the budget if you're not going to reform the entitlements, Medicaid and Medicare. So we would have that template. How do you reform Medicaid and Medicare? Also, you can't balance the federal budget if you're not going to reduce military spending. And that's not to compromise having an invincible national defense. But the Pentagon itself says that we could reduce U.S. bases by 25%. And that hasn't happened because there hasn't been the political will to see that happen.
I was looking on your website earlier today, and one of the things that jumped out at me was this notion of what you call intelligent immigration reform. You also mentioned welcoming or embracing immigrants. Tell me a little bit about what your plans are to deal with the immigration reform in this country.
Well, make it as easy as, first of all, as you point out, let's embrace immigration. We're a country of immigrants. The Wharton School of Business came out with a study here, and by the way, that's Donald Trump's alma mater, but came out with a study that said that if we increase immigration by 50%, that would have a dramatic positive impact on our economy. Reducing immigration would actually have a negative impact on our economy. So let's make it as easy as possible for somebody that wants to come into this country and work to be able to get a work visa. A work visa should entail a background check and a Social Security card that applicable taxes get paid. For the 11 million undocumented workers that exist in this country right now, look, as long as you've been law-abiding, come on in the door, get your work visa, and life will go on. Let's not build a wall across the border. If there's any country in the world that we should strengthen our economic and diplomatic ties with, it should be Mexico.
Give me some ideas about your thoughts on agriculture and ag policy. Obviously, South Dakota is a strongly agricultural state. Do you have some overall things you'd like to lead with there?
Well, I grew up in South Dakota, so I do understand the South Dakota way of life, having been molded by South Dakota, Aberdeen, and was born in North Dakota.
I did not know that. I'm gonna confess, yeah. I did not know you had Aberdeen roots, sir.
Oh, yes, yes. So growing up, understanding the church, understanding Boy Scouts, Cub Scouts, school, hunting, agriculture, meaning, you know, when it came to hunting, the ties that, you know, our family had with, the agricultural community and being able to go out and hunt pheasants. I mean, it was, so those are my ties. In South Dakota.
How about country of origin labeling? That's always a topic of conversation with our congressional delegation. What are your thoughts there?
What is that? I'm not sure if I know what that means, the country of origin labeling.
Sure. It was part of the 2002 Farm Bill, and then it was repealed in 2015, essentially calling for labels to say where the food products come from. So for farmers and ranchers here in South Dakota, some would argue that's a barrier to trade with other countries for us exporting. Others say that it, you know, helps. It's a transparency issue for American consumers. They should know where their meat has been produced, for example, and it helps, competitiveness for a South Dakota rancher.
Yeah, so, Lori, unless I'm missing something here, and I hate to misspeak, but really, I always seem to come down on the side of transparency, that giving you and I information about the products, in this case, agricultural products, ingredients, I have celiac disease. Look, I can't function. I can't function if I don't know the ingredients in products. And country of origin, I would just think that would also come under the heading of why, as a consumer, shouldn't I know that?
You have a mathematical plan for winning the election, and it's based on keeping Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton from under their mark of 270 electoral votes. Can you explain to me how that works mathematically?
Well, now, whether or not that ends up happening, the question gets asked, how might you win if it goes to the House of Representatives? If it goes to the House of Representatives, South Dakota has one vote in the House of Representatives. California has one vote in the House of Representatives. So, and you cannot have it go to the House of Representatives as a potential candidate unless you win a given state. So I would need to win a given state. It would need to go to the House of Representatives. It would need to go beyond one vote in the House of Representatives. And if it did that, I think I would be the only compromise candidate. And when I say myself, Bill Weld, two former Republican governors that served in heavily Democrat states, we've been there, we've done that. I think you don't have to guess with regard to outcome. We both were all about smaller governments. We were all about being socially inclusive.
Let's talk a little bit about that bipartisanship. If you're elected to be president of the United States, you're going to be working with a Congress that is deeply divided. How do you propose to sort of get over the obstruction that we're seeing now and come up with some reasonable compromise?
Well, first of all, I think that if Trump or Clinton is elected, that the polarization in Congress is not going to get any better. I don't think anybody believes that it's going to somehow magically come together. Third scenario, Bill Weld and myself get elected president, vice president, hiring a nonpartisan administration, Democrats, Republicans, Libertarians, come one, come all. It's all about hiring the best. So we're not going to be perceived as political with an agenda to kill the other side. I think we would have the opportunity to stand back and look, let's bring both sides to the table to deal with issues that this country has. I think we'd have the unique opportunity of potentially succeeding. And I say potentially because the other two scenarios, no way.
How would the presidential debates have been different had you been allowed on the stage and been able to engage? I'm assuming that you watched them or listened to them. How would they have been different with Gary Johnson on the stage?
Well, we are pledging to submit a balanced budget in the first 100 days. So talking about entitlements, something that neither one of them are going to address. I don't think it's an option to do nothing when it comes to Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security. There have to be reforms in those areas. I think when it comes to Hillary Clinton, that it will be very status quo when it comes to our military interventions. I think that she has been a leading hawk when it comes to our military interventions. Donald Trump, when he talks about immigration, it's way off base. He's going to deport 11 million undocumented workers. How's that going to work in New Mexico, where half the population is Hispanic? That's going to be a knock on the door, and let's see your papers. And if you don't have your papers, it's off to Mexico. I'm telling you, Lori, that is going to be ugly. When he says that he's going to apply a 35% tariff on imported goods, when currently that figure is 1.4%. Who's going to pay for that? Well, you and I are going to pay for that. So Hillary's going to grow government. Government's the answer to everything. Taxes are going to go up. Donald Trump's certainty, and I think that Donald Trump is toast in this election right now. So the pitch is there is an alternative, an honorable alternative to Donald Trump. But look, the certainty with Donald Trump is complete uncertainty. I don't know where he's at regarding anything. So we're the only free markets. We're the only candidates. I'm the only presidential candidate that would sign the Trans-Pacific Partnership, believing that it would result in more U.S. jobs, not less. I think agriculturally, that would be a boom for agriculture to have the Trans-Pacific Partnership signed.
What states are you feeling particularly confident in right now?
Well, the states that we are the strongest in, New Mexico, Colorado, Idaho, I think that South Dakota has shown up pretty strong, Wisconsin, Maine, New Hampshire, kind of all in the same range, but stronger than the other states, Alaska.
As you've traveled throughout the country meeting Americans and listening to what they have to say, how has that changed your policies?
Well, really, not changed at all. Perhaps more in terms of just a reassurance that my voice does represent a whole lot of people. Right now, leading among independents, right now, tied for the lead among young people, right now leading overwhelmingly leading among active military personnel. I'm proud of giving people a first vote in this election, something that neither Trump nor Clinton does for a lot of people.
Let's talk to those voters of Donald Trump and say there's somebody who kind of wanted to vote for the GOP candidate but has some reservations. How would you pull them away from a Trump vote toward a vote for you?
Well, that I think, never speaking specifically to an individual, that's part of being libertarian. Is you don't want to take anybody by the collar, but if you are genuinely about smaller government, if you genuinely do believe that people should be able to enjoy personal liberty and freedom, if you genuinely believe that these wars have not resulted in a safer United States, and if you genuinely believe in free markets devoid of government picking winners and losers, I'm your guy.
Same question for Hillary Clinton voters. Maybe they were going to vote for Clinton and have some doubts going into November 8th. What would you say to pull them into your camp?
The same thing that I just said. fiscally conservative, socially inclusive, skeptical on the wars, supportive of free markets.
The war in Syria is a complicated issue. How do you approach something that's really that complex? Is it as simple as you're making it sound?
Well, no, it's very complex, and it's very complex, and what it boils down to is we're shooting at ourselves. When we support the Free Syrian Army, which is on the east side of Aleppo against the Assad on the west, and we arm the Free Syrian Army, but there's all sorts of conjecture that by arming the Free Syrian Army, that those arms will fall into the hands of the Islamists, in the hands of ISIS. And in fact, that does happen, and we're getting shot at by our own, I say we, our special forces, civilians caught in the middle. When we support the Kurds against ISIS, and the Kurds are sideways with Turkey, Turkey not being as good an ally as they once were because of our invasion of Iraq, you can argue that Saddam's henchmen fled and actually organized, played a key role in organizing ISIS. And before any of this started, we supported, materially supported Assad with his fight against the Islam. Can't make this stuff up. And yet this is what we're engaged in. This is a no-win situation that as horrible as Assad is and as horrible things that he has done, which I'm not offering up any defense whatsoever, our involvement has not made it any better.
But knowing what you will inherit if you win the White House, how do you move forward from the situation as it stands?
The only way to move forward is to involve Russia, and it has to have a diplomatic solution. I would also point to North Korea and the threat that it poses, and the only solution for North Korea is joining hands with China to address that diplomatically.
Libertarian candidate Gary Johnson visited Rapid City this weekend. We talked with Governor Johnson before the latest revelations from the FBI regarding the investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails. A Politico Morning Consult poll released this morning has Johnson polling at 7%.